back in the mid-1970s, the Rockefeller family actually took all of John D. Rockefeller's papers, put them in an archive center, transferred all the rights to those papers to a team of professional archivists, threw open the doors to the public, and nobody came. I think that they must have felt that they were throwing the greatest banquet for historians of all time, and then nobody, you know, showed up at the feast. There were actually a lot of different oil refiners and marketers in the United States who would say to you, come and do business with us because we're taking on the Standard Oil octopus. You know, we're this brave little independent outfit. And they encouraged people to do business with them for that reason. Very often, the most vocal of those independents were wholly owned subsidiaries of John D. Rockefeller. And a lot of the people who were saying that and working for these companies had no idea that the company was owned lock, stock, and barrel by Rockefeller. It's amazing that he was able to operate a business that was so large with such secrecy. Contradiction is the very heart of this story. I mean, this is a story of a man who was both the most ferocious businessman of the era, who was at the same time the most visionary philanthropist. There was a tremendous commodity boom during the Civil War, which really gave him his grubstake. It was during the Civil War that he invested in his first refinery in 1863. And as is always the case, when you have one of these colossal fortunes, you have a great deal of brilliance and shrewdness, and it also is a story of someone who was in the right place at the right time. When we look at all of the businesses in the late 19th century, the one business that really begins to foreshadow the great multinational corporations of the 20th century is Standard Oil. In so many respects, he's a quintessential 19th century man, except in his business and his philanthropy, he is creating forms that are amazingly modern. He'd spent an enormous amount of time rationalizing to himself what he had done and trying to reconcile his religious behavior with his business behavior, which took a stretch. And so he has, because he feels that he has God on his side, he has this unshakable certitude that makes him very hard to beat. Because he feels that he has God on his side, he also is dangerously immune to criticism. There's an element of fanaticism in the whole thing. The terminology that he used to justify this was patently religious terminology. He said, I told the other refiners, my brethren, come into the ark with me. You are in a slough of despond. You know, we will save you. So that there's no question that he converted Standard Oil into a kind of annex of the Baptist church. And I think it's the reason that people see parallels between the my biography and the present is that we are again in an age of the entrepreneur founder. We again live in an economy where there are, for the first time in many decades, a lot of entrepreneurs who are rolling up major new fortunes. Rockefeller, who certainly had his quota of greed, I think would have been amazed by the salaries that corporate executives pay themselves today. The Gilded Age was a period of new technologies and new industries that led to new fortunes. So people had to decide what's a healthy level of concentration industry, what constitutes fair business practices, what's the proper degree of government intervention in the economy, what are the obligations of people who amass great fortunes. You know, so you see all of these issues that, I must say, 100 years ago, tremendously polarized society are with us today. I've written about a lot of rich people, and I must say, I don't mind being comfortable and having money to pay the rent and picking up a few dollars in royalties, but doing these books has not left me with a burning desire to have great wealth. It has a very distorting impact.